Mexico City's buildings rest on the ruins of the Aztec civilization. Southern supermarkets are built on Civil War battlefields. And here in Central Florida, many of our subdivisions, roads, and schools sit on Indian council grounds, settlers' homesteads, and the fields and groves that fed the United States in the first half of the 20th century. East Seminole County has one of those hidden historical treasures. On August 22nd, the Seminole Historical Commission dedicated the first historical marker in Winter Springs. It marks the location of the town of Wagner. Never heard of Wagner? It's under your tires as you drive on State Road 434, and under your feet as you play baseball at Central Winds Park or conduct business at City Hall. This area, from the shores of Lake Jessup to Howell Branch Creek, has a deep history. It may be invisible to the eye, but it is still alive in the memories of some citizens of Seminole County. At the dedication for the new marker for Wagner, I spoke to several members of the Seminole County Historical Commission as we sat near the marker on State Road 434. First, Ed LaRue, a member of the Historical Commission, gives us a picture of the earliest period of settlements in the area.
You know, Tuscarora Road at the end had a wharf, and Lake Jessup was more shallow than Lake Monroe, and the ships that were on the St. John's couldn't really get in here too easily. But the shallow draft ship could come in with some goods. And Tuscarora Road was an old Indian trail, as well as some others around here. Howell Creek, just beyond that, had an old wooden bridge built in the 1870s. And a man was commissioned by the name of O'Brien to put the pilings down with power things that were driven by hand on Howell Creek, because these citizens that lived in present-day Slavia and Oviedo, about 90 people lived there in the 1880s, would have to come to the end of Tuscarora Road to the wharf to get their foodstuffs. You know, their bacon, their beans, their flour, their sugar, their salt, this kind of thing. And they could not get across Howell Creek because it was so sharply banked. The horses could not get down and back up. So a bridge went in, and the man came out and camped because he was home-based in Orlando. He camped for 2 months with helpers in white tents, and would work from Monday to Friday, and then they would go by horseback into Orlando for the weekend and come back out here. It was so long to travel. The pilings are still there. It was built in 1876, 11 years after the Civil War.
Sometimes events don't reach the high standards of historical research, but make for a great story about the region.
Now, a farmer on a tractor about a half a mile west of here hit something, a clunk-clunk in the ground, turning over soil. Went down to investigate and found the remnants of a breastplate and a helmet. And this was so intriguing because the DeSoto came through here about 40 miles west of here in the 1500s. Now, I can't verify this. Supposedly, the helmet was decayed and rusted and broken. The breastplate was just evidence of the Spanish army coming through here. Now, the thing that makes it possibly plausible is that the line of cypress trees on the south end of Lake Jessup going to Soldiers across Soldiers Creek and where the Big Tree Park is today, was the most prominent stand of cypress in Florida. We know that the Indians had council here. It's just possible that some of the Indians knew of DeSoto's passage and interacted with him and led some of his party over here and maybe slaughtered them, killed the man, took the things of his body and buried them. Now, that's possible. I don't want to start a rumor, but it's an intriguing story. I cannot verify it.
Cecil Tucker, the vice president of the Seminole Historical Commission, was the county agricultural agent during the years when Seminole County was the celery and cabbage center of the United States. Half a century ago, he watched as acres of produce were grown and shipped to northern markets each winter.
I came into Seminole County in 1956 as Seminole County agricultural agent. Because this was farm area out here, I had a lot of memories, a lot of dealings with the farmers out here in the Wagner area. In those days, it was just a two-lane road till you got to the sharp curve. At that sharp curve, on the north side of the road was the railroad track, and they used to load cabbage and celery. But on the south side of the highway, that farm stayed operational for a good many years after the rest of them. They grew primarily cabbage.
Do you remember who were the people that worked the farm?
Well, the farm workers, since the people that was farming here headquartered in Sanford, many of the farm workers actually was part of their crew in Sanford, but there was some that came from Oviedo here. But basically the black workers in both areas worked here on these farms. The thing that was different in this area is that we had subterranean irrigation. There was tile about 18, 24 inches below the surface, that the water came into that tile from artesian wells. And that system acted both as a irrigation and a drainage system. At the end of the line, they could plug it up, put the water in, and make the water level or rise in the fields. After a big rain like we've been getting lately, they pull those plugs out and it would drain it out.
There are few residents of Wagner around today, but Walter Hendricks grew up in Wagner. Mr. Hendricks is 69 and has owned Hendricks Antiques and Furniture Restoration of Oviedo for 45 years. His mother worked in the fields that Cecil Tucker has just described.
All of the farm area, big farm area, they raise pepper, cabbage, corn. The people come from different places to work on the farm, but my mother and my aunt were study workers there. I remember that farm so vivid. They had the big pocket holes, what was called manholes. They would stop up different areas to water different areas of the farm where they use irrigation now on top. The irrigation was underground then. And matter of fact, all of those tiles are still underground up there in that subdivision.
What was your mother's day like as a worker on the farm?
Up early, work to noon, and then she would come home for dinner. Well, they had a big bell on the farm that they rang to let them know that it was time to stop for dinner and then time to go back to work. They worked to 5 o'clock.
What kind of work was it?
It was hoeing the plants. When they planted the cabbage, she would ride that setting machine and place the plant in the slot, which the machine would then put it in the ground and cover it. In time for harvesting, she participated in the harvesting also. I was always out in the fields with her and running up and down the roads, but never worked in the field, me and my brother. But they would bring in the crews from Sanford and the surrounding area and let them harvest the crop. The train come from Sanford, and they would fill the car boxes with the produce and take it away. I remember there in Wagner, there was a depot. They had two mules on the farm, a gray mule and a brown mule. I don't remember the name, but the gray mule would always get out. In that depot, they would ship in hay for the mule. Well, the hay was always a peanut hay. Me and my brother would all love to climb up in the hay and pick the little peanuts out of it.
Those boys in the peanut hay enjoyed the fun, but had school and chores to do as well.
I started school at a one-room church school that was from first to eighth grade. It served as a church on Sunday, and the school starts on Monday. And the school was located where the Winter Springs City Hall is right now. On the farm, I remember, my mother would tell me, I want you to have supper cooked when I come. She didn't say what. We had a four-burner wood stove, the oven placed on the side you put the wood in, and a place up top where you stored for warm food. And at 6 years old, I had to gather wood, start the fire, and put the food on. I had a wooden stool about a foot and a half. You look at me now, you wouldn't believe it, but I was just a little bitty teeny thing. And I would have to get up on that stool and look in the pot to see what was what. And when my mother come home, must have been good because they ate it. Ate it like it was a gourmet meal. I don't ever remember getting sick. I remember I got a cut. My brother cut me with a cabbage knife. And it must have hit an artery vessel because it was pumping blood. And my mother was gone, so I run to my aunt's house. And she reached up in the corner and grabbed a handful of spider web and put it on that cut. And it went, turned off just like a faucet. That's things people don't know today.
Probably the most singular aspect of Wagner was the famous Dead Man's Curve. This dangerous 90-degree turn in the road between Longwood and Oviedo was eliminated by the engineers when State Road 434 was modernized. Commission member Ed LaRue remembers it well.
And my kids also went to Oviedo High School, and during their time there, they graduated in the 80s, there were two or three fatalities from the Wagner Curve, absolutely.
Walter Hendricks witnessed a deadly accident on that curve.
It was just like a horseshoe. It was a terrible curve. There was a pickup truck, had 7 or 8 men on it, going to the orange grove. And the young man that was driving the truck was driving real fast. This particular day, we was walking up there, and this truck passed with all these men on it. When it got to the curve, it just flipped bottom up. And after they pulled all the men out, there was one man under the truck dead. Dead man's curve. It was dangerous.
The new historic marker by the side of the road near that once dangerous curve reminds us that there's a history beneath our feet. Visit the Historical Society in your community to learn more. For Central Florida Matters, this is Desta Horner.
Dead Man's Curve. Do you remember that, Desta?
Oh, I sure do, Steve. I drove that road often through the 1970s. That area was mainly orange groves or fields, so that at night it was very dark. And, of course, it only had 2 lanes. You had to watch carefully for headlights approaching from the other direction as warning and slow down.
My own observations suggest that that area has really changed a lot in a relatively short time.
It certainly has. Winter Springs is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and it has reshaped the entire landscape of that area dramatically. Mr. Hendricks' mother, who died at 86, wouldn't recognize her old home today. We will post additional information about the community of Wagner on our website at cmfmedia.org, where you'll be able to see pictures of the event and find helpful links to other sites relative to the topic. You'll also be able to listen to the extended interview with Mr. Hendricks.
In upcoming history features on Central Florida Matters, we'll be seeking stories about the unincorporated communities of Taintsville, Slavia, and Jamestown. So if you're a source of knowledge about one of those geographic areas in East Seminole County, click on the contact link on the CMF website and send us an email, won't you? We'll be in touch.
And leave a comment or email the feature to a friend, family member, or colleague if you believe they will have an interest in the history of our communities.